Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai greeting you from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. Arvind is not with me here today for this week's episode. I'm having a guest, and I'm sure that you'll be enjoying what me and my brother here, Hari Shankar from the Central Trust, is having to offer you. So on behalf of all of you, I offer my humble pranams to Swami and welcome Hari. Saram Hari.
Saram Prem. Great to be here for this program.
We're not having Arvind with us.
Yes,
so he's traveling. And I think when Swami was there, it was a pattern which we all followed.
That time I remember we had the privilege of actually, offering a letter to Swami and taking his blessings before we started on any vacation.
Okay.
And he would so lovingly, he would inquire like, where are you going, with whom you would be staying, and even offer vibhuti. I recall one instance where I had to travel to my hometown.
Okay.
And of course Swami sent vibhuti and he gave his blessings, but later he instructed the secretary of the trust, Mr. Chakravarti. He told him to send me a message to tell the taxi driver to drive slowly.
Swami sent word through.
Yes, he sent word through Mr. Chakravarti, saying that tell that boy to tell the taxi driver to drive carefully. So that was, as soon as I got in, I told him this is the instruction from Swami. He was a localite, so he immediately understood what he has to do. So that was the care with which he used to, send us for our vacations.
Right. But in a sense, it used to be a different feeling going out of Prashanthi Nilayam.
First of all, you're traveling to your hometown and, there the people lead an entirely different life.
Right.
So the first thing is they're very curious about what you're doing, especially when they hear, okay, you've taken the mainstream degrees, like you've done an engineering or a BCom and then went on to do an MBA. Or, like an MSc degree you've taken, and then you're working in an ashram. So that is definitely something they're very curious about. And even like when you travel, like I like to talk to the people around me when I travel. I'm very interested in their lives. Like, what are they up to? What do they do? And that is also reciprocated. So they ask me like, where are you from? And so I like to take that opportunity to actually share about who Swami is.
Okay.
Like, I'm pretty sure that you two would have had like a similar experience. Like,
Not really, not much in my case, because most of the time I used to travel in the night and get into the vehicle and go to sleep.
Right.
But definitely that curiosity is always there.
Yes.
Even when I go back home, people meet. And definitely they're yearning to know what could make somebody stay back there in spite of, as you're saying, well equipped with good degrees.
Yes.
And it's, I think, increasingly coming to be well known that Swami's university is academically also very sound.
Yes.
So when they know of that idea that why would somebody choose to stay back there or choose to worship Swami, even those who have not stayed back here in the ashram.
Exactly. They've also encountered devotees who they too are very enthusiastic when it comes to talking about Swami, sharing about who Swami is. They've definitely seen their dedication to the service activities at their center, and that is something that intrigues them. Like, what is it about Swami that binds you like so strongly to Swami?
Right.
That he occupies so much mind space, as you would say. So whenever, in the initial days, just soon after I completed my studies here, and that's when a lot of these questions were being asked, like, why are you being there? And every time I would talk about Swami, I'd tell them who Swami is. And while describing Swami, what I would do is I would talk about his miracles, talk about him as an extraordinary human being or extraordinary being with superpowers, that he's omniscient, he's omnipresent, omnipotent. And during our time as students, like, we have seen or experienced so many such miracles where Swami is so obviously such a miraculous being.
Right.
Something, he transcends nature in so many different ways, that this is what I most enthusiastically used to share with them. Or to a certain extent about the projects, the service projects, welfare projects that Swami was undertaking. And what I noticed was there was definitely a lot of curiosity. It elicited a lot of fascination that, oh, Swami can do this, Swami can do that. And it was a little later that I realized that it's not landing the way I had intended it to. There's something missing. Like, I had not really moved them, or something did shift for them inside that, it was never like, okay, like, well, how can I come to Prashanthi Nilayam? How can I meet Baba? I want to see, like, what are his teachings? I could not really go beyond a certain stage of getting them curious about Bhagwan a little bit, that to a certain degree, that was the only thing that I could achieve. So it had me really thinking that what is this element? There is something missing in my communication about Swami to the people around me.
Okay.
There's something that is missing. And what was that missing element, you know? So as I introspected, I realized that what I was missing was the context in which these miracles were taking place.
Mm-hmm.
See, in general, when we say we relate a story to somebody or any happening that we talk about, if you notice, we deliver the content. We say this is what happened. But we always tend to miss out the context in which something happens. Like,
right.
That is so important. And especially when it comes to Bhagwan, what I realized is that the miracles, speaking of the miracles themselves, does not convey the essence of who Bhagwan is. And let me give you like one example. I had this classmate of mine when I was doing my engineering studies.
Okay.
And he once conveyed this to me, that he had an uncle who was a devotee of Bhagwan, and Vibhuti used to manifest on the photographs of Swami in that person's house. It was his own uncle. So he took the liberty of, you know, going over to his house, and he wanted to examine like how this Vibhuti manifestation takes place. And being an engineer, like he wanted to investigate it so thoroughly,
okay,
that he actually took the photograph apart, in the sense, mm-hmm, like he took the photograph out of the frame, investigated the frame, investigated the photograph, and he was so satisfied that whatever was happening was something that was beyond his explanation. Definitely beyond his explanation. So he put the photograph back in the frame and all, and what he conveyed to me was, I know that Swami is a supernatural person. But he had absolutely no affinity. There was like, he never felt the need ever to come to Prashantilayam to have darshan of Swami, or to, you know, go to a Sai center and find out like how he can volunteer or participate in any of the activities. None of that was happening. It did not generate any bit of affinity for Swami.
Mm-hmm.
Like then I realized that, you know, speaking about Swami's miracles, it creates a certain amount of fascination in people, a little bit of curiosity. But it does not slake that thirst which the soul is really experiencing deep inside.
In a sense, what we do, I mean, as you described it,
yeah,
we are sharing something which was not actually the thing which drew us to him.
Yes.
We are sharing about something which has become special because of something else.
Yes, exactly.
And we are not sharing that central theme.
Exactly.
No, so, right. I was actually reminded of what a devotee from Delhi once shared.
Uh-huh.
You know, something similar to this.
Right.
She came in the 1940s, one of the earliest devotees to come from North India.
Okay.
And she was not very fascinated about what Swami was doing in the miracles front.
Mm-hmm.
What Swami was able to materialize. And you can imagine, in 1940s, Chitravati days, it was 100-folds what we also as
Leela.
It was a Leela phase, as Swami, yes, would call it. And all kinds of things. And almost every first interaction with the family which comes in would be the revelation of Swami's omniscience.
Right.
Swami would talk about things which only the family knew.
Absolutely.
And would address the problem straight away without being intimated about it.
Mm.
And this was a very common thing. And she did not feel drawn to Swami because of any of these.
Mm.
Because she had come from the background of the Ramakrishna Mutt.
Okay.
Where we all know Ramakrishna Paramahamsa spoke very strongly against the exhibition of one's
powers
as such. Not what Swami exhibited, but those of Siddhas, you know, the Siddhis,
acquired,
what they used to call, acquired powers. And she was wondering, you know, why is Swami doing all this? Why is he doing all this? And she never completely accepted Swami like how she did much
later.
I can
imagine like she would have felt a little uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable
or
also.
Unease,
you know, yeah, because there's one side of your perceptions which says that these are wrong.
Yes.
And here is Swami doing all this. Hmm. So she was saying that one day she saw a scene where a couple of devotees were leaving, a group of devotees rather.
Hmm.
They were leaving after staying with Swami for about a month. And we've all read of those descriptions where they would board a bullock cart,
right,
and they would drive away across the sands of Chitravati, and Swami would stand near the gate,
right,
and wave a handkerchief till the cart has gone out of sight.
Yes.
You know, and she saw the sight. She was standing near the mandir and she was seeing this, and she saw that everybody in that group, from toddlers to the oldest in that group, they were all in tears.
Right.
And they were crying so bitterly that they were leaving Swami. And this she thought was really weird. She said, this cannot be because of miracles. You know, okay, if somebody is doing miracles, you're in awe of that person. You're excited to be in that person's presence.
Exactly.
But you cannot miss this person the way these people are missing, the way when they are having to leave the place. So she said, this cannot be just because of Swami's miracles and powers.
Yes.
And even as she was thinking this, she just thought that maybe, probably this is because of Swami's love. Which is kind of striking a chord in their hearts.
Yes.
And as this thought crossed her mind, she just felt somebody patting her from behind. And she turned back and there was Swami standing there.
Oh.
I mean, Swami tells her, Kamala Sarathi, the thought which is coming to you now is the right thought.
Yes.
Hold on to it, you will understand me better.
Exactly. And, you know, this is something that exactly conveys what I had in mind. That when we look at all those incidents about Swami's interactions with the devotee, what we are mainly missing out is the context called love. That Swami is love. You know, the best description of Swami that I have ever heard is that he is love walking on 2 feet. And believe me, like, this may seem like such a simplistic expression that he is love, and that it may be trite, hackneyed, so overused term that love is, that it may sound like so very simplistic. And yet, like, I would request all the listeners to just for a moment, you know, set aside everything that you have heard about Bhagwan. And just listen as if you're doing this for the very first time. You're listening about Swami for the very first time. And just hear the words that he is love incarnate. That's all there is. Swami is just love incarnate. And then when you stand in that place and then you begin to see the life of Bhagwan, then you can see that behind every little action, every small thing that he did, there was an infinitude of love, there was an ocean of love that stood in the background. That every miracle, like when we actually speak to that particular person, when Swami has created a ring or a chain or something, there is such a lot of background. There is so much when you can really learn from speaking to a person. Like, I recall there is one classmate of mine. We both were seated for darshan. This was when I was a student over here of the MBA class. Yes. So I had a classmate and he had very little background about who Swami is. Absolutely no background. His aunt had somehow recommended that he join this college for MBA, and that's how he found himself there, out of respect for her wishes. And we both were just there, we were talking about Swami, and Swami, he had come out of the interview room, and he was a little far away. So that's why, you know, those days we used to maintain such silence in Mandir. But even though Swami was, he was a little far away, so it was okay for us to speak a little bit. We were speaking in whispers about Swami. And then suddenly Swami started making his way towards where we were sitting.
Okay.
Now you need to know a little bit about this
classmate
of mine. Other than that, he was new to Swami. He was someone who had very low self-esteem, that he didn't feel equal to, you know, speaking to other people in the class. Okay. Imagine that this is an MBA, you know, class.
Right.
And he needed to give a lot of presentations, etc. He always found himself lacking in that self-esteem or the confidence that he could talk to people. He always felt a little inferior to other classmates of his. So Swami comes, he comes close to us and he's standing in front of us. And then Swami looks at him and he asks him, boy, where did you come from? You know, the usual questions. And suddenly he says in Hindi, baat karne mein takleef hota hai, do you experience difficulty in speaking?
Okay.
And I was so stunned. I was looking at Swami, and Swami was intently looking at that boy, and still no words are coming out of that boy's mouth. And Swami immediately, he materialized a ring for him and he slid it into his finger. And it was a perfect match. You should have seen the transformation that occurred in that student in that 1 minute interaction. It completely changed his life. This was probably his only interaction in his 2 years in that MBA. But very soon, we saw the miraculous change in the way he presented himself, in the way he began to look at himself. His confidence boosted, his self-esteem boosted, and to such an extent that the teacher started saying that he was giving the best presentations in the class. And I'm so happy that, you know, recently when I met him again, I found that he was working for a very, very well-established multinational. He was working in Canada. Mm-hmm. Like, and his career itself completely took off in a much different manner than he had expected. So
that's
so what
really
somebody
cool.
would have seen is just that Swami created a ring for that particular boy. But when you actually sit and investigate what is really happening, you see that Swami is making such an enormous difference in that 1 minute interaction. That there's so much love behind that small act. Something has shifted for that person.
In fact, you know, there's another problem of not sharing about Swami without this context, which you say of. What comes to my mind is what happened with the Mr. Jim Sinclair, you know, the billionaire from United States. Imagine he gets introduced to Swami when Swami appears in his room in New York.
Oh.
Swami appears in front of him. He has no idea who this person is.
Yes.
He's crying out to Jesus Christ. He's crying out to God saying that, are you there? And if you're there, I want you for me. And there Swami appears in front of him. He sees this person and wonders who he is. And then he goes out into a bookstall where he finds a book on Swami and learns about Swami and comes to India.
Oh.
You know, this is how he comes to Swami. And suppose if I were to just share this experience to somebody, somebody might say, yes, Swami needs all the money.
Yes,
you know, he's exactly. a philanthropist and he's doing work which is unmatched. He needs the money. And it's understandable that he goes out to a billionaire and appears in front of him. When he has the ability to do that, well, why wouldn't he?
Yes.
But the beauty is, you know, when he comes here, the first time he comes to Prashanthi Nilayam, he's called in for an interview. He's sitting there with Swami. And, you know, look at it from Sinclair's point of view. Here is a person who's proved beyond doubt that he has the ability to come anywhere and read your mind and give you what you need. Okay. It is that kind of an awe he is looking at Swami with.
Yes.
And Swami asks him, will you do one thing for me? And Sinclair is like, Swami, anything. You know, I don't know what was running in Sinclair's mind. Maybe he also would have thought like us that Swami needs all the money. So he said, Swami, anything for you. And Swami looked at him and said, always be happy.
Oh.
And that really struck the, you know, even what Swami appearing in front of him in New York did not do.
Yes.
It melted him then. But you know, when Swami looked at him and said, I want you to be happy.
Yes.
That is why I've drawn you here. You know, that moved him. And if you narrate only Swami appearing there in New York and
Absolutely.
Giving darshan, you'll miss the context completely.
Yes. Just as you were speaking, you know, those words which you mentioned, that Swami said that I want you always to be happy. It just came to me that this is always a blessing that a mother gives to her children.
Absolutely.
She seeks nothing for herself except that one thing, that her children be happy. Any parent, that's what they seek from their children. And speaking of this, what comes to mind is, you know, there was an encounter very long back, like, where there was this rationalist. He was doing very, very good work, that he wanted to rid people, the common people, of the superstitions
in society.
They had, yes, in society. Like, he could see the way it was harming them. It was harming their mind, and how you know, they were not thinking for themselves. And this was a noble work that he was undertaking. But in that, he also, like, he saw that, you know, Swami, a lot of people are getting attracted to Bhagwan when they hear about his miracles. And he challenged Swami that you should create a watermelon for me. You create a watermelon for me to prove that you have divine powers. And Swami declined. And that person, he kept saying that, you know, for many years he kept on trotting this fact that Swami never responded to the challenge that he gave. In fact, he backed away from that. But, you know, when I look back at that incident, I see that even that rationalist, he had completely missed the context in which Swami does any of his miracles. None of them are for any demonstration of any power. In fact, Swami himself, I have seen how he downplays his miracles. He used to call them as his visiting cards. And whenever we used to ask him, Swami, how do you do this? All he used to say that it is my nature. So from his point of view, that there was nothing very extraordinary about what he was doing. It could be like as simple as maybe walking or breathing, how natural it is for any of us. That's how natural it was for him. Whatever Swami's actions were, they were always prompted by love for that particular devotee. That is the main thing, that this person also missed this context, and therefore that question was raised, like, can you materialize a watermelon And you can see how ludicrous it sounds now in that context, that you're challenging him to demonstrate a power. To what end? Just merely to establish himself as somebody who is supernatural? That was not what Swami came for.
That is the beauty where, you know, there were always people who came and said, you prove that you're God by doing such things, you know, you know, create a watermelon and all that.
Yes.
That was a challenge thrown to Swami. But we also come across so many people who came to Swami and said, Swami, do this for me, I will take you as my God.
Yes, yes.
You know, in that challenge, there was a yearning to accept Swami.
Yes.
There was no challenge in that, but there was a yearning. You know, I want to accept you, but I want something to satisfy my rational
and a little
thinking.
Bit of faith that he is capable of doing.
He is capable of doing that. And I think every one of those, Swami answered it. And in fact, Swami says that you have every right to come and test me.
Yes.
When you come with that kind of a feeling, he says, you're ready. You're allowed to test me. And once your doubt has been removed, then don't test me after that.
Yes.
Because that is to your peril.
Yes.
You don't do that. And that's the beauty. Swami took the challenges which were coming from an earnest seeker.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it is so nice to speak now of, you know, the incidents that take place with so many devotees. Supposing you stand in that, I want to now see what the element of love, like what kind of love that Swami used to, you know, exhibit to devotees. And really, when someone asks me, you know, if you ask me, like, how do you know that Swami is love? So, of course, I could talk to you about all the projects, the water project that has benefited so many people, or, you know, Chennai, where, you know, the water project in Chennai, it was completely, like, nobody had planned it, nobody had suggested to Swami, and the most surprised people were definitely the devotees in Chennai, because they never really, you know, overtly or as a group, they never prayed to Swami that, Swami, we need water. It was completely out of his own will, his own love. They not even prayed that suffering be relieved. And if I were to relate about this, or relate about the educational institutions where I have studied, I have received the benefit of free education. And all these are, yes, they are huge dollop-sized servings of love. Definitely. But what I saw as a student were these very, very small incidents, you know, totally unplanned, spontaneous, random. And that really showed me the extent of Bhagwan's love, the depth, the profundity of Bhagwan's love, the actual nature that he is. Like, I could, so many, you know, little incidents come to mind. There oftentimes when I used to feel, you know, that Swami is just waiting for that opportunity to show how much he loves. I'll tell you a very small incident. This was in Trai Vrindavan. This was the Trai sessions, you know, during the summer when all of us used to be, the holidays time, we would be spending with Swami in summer instead of back with our parents. And so Swami would delight us with those Trai sessions. He would call us every single day after darshan, maybe a discourse, or maybe would ask someone to sing. But they were such delightful, memorable sessions, these Trai sessions. And very informal interactions would take place, which were lovely to watch. And I recall one such instance. There was this boy who had suddenly taken gardening as a hobby. And he was doing a little bit of service, gardening service, in the Vrindavan campus.
Okay.
The institute. And he had somehow got hold of maybe a new breed of rose, or I don't recall exactly, a rose plant. And he was very excited about it. He was telling Swami about the new initiative that he has taken up. And Swami also responded just as enthusiastically. He said, where is it? I want to see that rose plant. And see, we are talking about heat. The summer in Bangalore is so mild compared to the summer in Prashanthi. In any case, it was the evening time when this session was taking place. When Swami told that boy to go and get that particular plant, it's just a, you know, half a kilometer sprint, you know, all considered. So this boy goes and gets the plant, and he is so astonished at the sight that greets him when he returns back. Swami is sitting there, and when he comes back, the first thing that Swami does is he hands him a tumbler of water. He says, drink this. And it is no other tumbler except the one that he was using.
Swami's own tumbler.
Swami offered his very own, the tumbler which he uses, to this boy and said, drink. It was just that one opportunity, you know, he could show that how deeply he loves every single person.
You know, even as you're talking about Swami offering his tumbler, I reminded what Sanjay Sanisa once narrated to us in our class, where once he was speaking in Trai session in front of Swami, And he had a bad throat, so he started choking and he started coughing. So immediately Swami turned, asked for his glass and gave it to sir and offered it to Sanjay Sahni sir.
Yes.
And he said when Swami offered the glass to him, the scenes which flashed in his mind were of how much trouble the altar boys take to maintain that glass and that water for Swami. Because they used to do a lot of things, you know, I don't know whether it was necessary, but out of their love, they used to boil it, they used to cool it, then filter it, some 2-3 times filtering, and then keep it in a clean flask, and then wash that glass so many times. And he said, I was reminded of all that, and this is all done for Swami. You know, it wouldn't be right for me to take Swami's glass and drink from it. So he very politely refused, and he said, Swami, it's fine. And he saw Swami's face changed. You know, Swami got very angry. At least Swami was upset.
Outward, yeah.
And after that, he continued his talk. And then some small mistake which he made, Swami turned to him and, you know, Swami scolded him. And he said, what, pichi pichi matlaltunavu and all that, and made him sit down. And he said, after that, I ruminated over the thing and I realized that Swami felt so hurt that you're saying that I don't want your glass. You know, that is for you and mine is different. He said, he could feel that Swami was hurt like a mother would get hurt.
Yes.
Swami is giving, he's saying that what is mine is yours.
Yours. Yes.
But you are not able to see that one. And he felt so bad that, you know, Swami was expressing such pure love and we were trying to keep the distance and give him the dignity of a divinity.
Yes, yes. I do recall another similar incident. These are the times when Swami used to, you know, in Prashanthi Nilayam itself, in the ashram, Swami would get into the golf cart and he used to go around. And luckily, like, I was part of the Vedam group at that time. He used to call us, you know, he would say, you be the security ring.
Because it was an open vehicle.
Yes, yes. And it was a wonderful opportunity, honestly, to see, like, Bhagwan in that setting, like, you know, out of the mandir and, you know, just looking at all the people. People would crowd in Prashanthi Nilayam, or even when he went outside the ashram, people would crowd around to see. And for us, it was a wonderful chance to observe, like, Swami lovingly look at all of them as he passed by them, you know. And one, in that huge crowd, once he saw one of the students, who was standing a little distance away. Just, you know, out of the corner of his eye. In a flash, we also did not realize, he's already turned to that boy, indicated, beckoned to him that he should come near the vehicle. So that boy, he was very flabbergasted and he came immediately. And he started running along with us. Then Swami, you know, he actually shifted a few centimeters to the right. And he said, come, sit here.
My God.
You know, there's absolutely like no self-consciousness or, you know, that I am God and this is one of my devotees. And he's a young student. He's, you know, not even like somebody who's working or somebody of eminence in society.
In
he's
our
a
eyes.
Student, yes. And Swami is making place for him. No? He said, come and sit here. Because he had invited him to join the entourage. So, and you could see that boy's expression that he refused. And he said, Swami, no, Swami, I'll walk with you. I'll, you know, like, but I cannot sit over there. I cannot take a seat next to you. But it was so beautiful just to watch that interaction. Complete natural flow, spontaneous. And I tell you, as a student over here, I've heard and watched so many such incidents happen. One I will relate.
Sure.
If we have the time. This happened to a very close friend of mine. And what had happened was, his father is experiencing some chest pains, and in Chennai he went and showed it to a doctor, and the doctor said there's nothing to worry, maybe after 6 months we'll do a checkup. So somehow there's something, he's feeling a little uneasy about this, and he told Swami that this is what is happening. Swami said, no, you bring him here, we'll get him checked up, he needs surgery. Swami already said that your father needs surgery. And that's what, when he came over here, they realized that he had blocks in 5 of his arteries.
Right.
He needed immediate intervention. So, Swami arranged for his stay over here and then subsequently admission into the hospital. And Swami would actually go to the hospital, give instructions to the doctors and all that. And say the surgery is scheduled for the morning. Previous evening, Swami calls this student to the interview room. And he's sitting there and Swami tells him, you know, this is what I'm doing, like tomorrow the operation will take place from this time to this time, this is the doctor who's operating, all that to allay his anxiety. But still Swami could see the worry on that boy's face. And then the student narrated, like, what Swami did next. He said he took his, you know, he placed his hand behind his head, Swami placed his hand behind his head, and then gently put it on his lap. and asked him to put his, you know, lay down like that, and then he kept stroking the student's head. Now, can you imagine like that kind of affection like from Swami? When this boy actually narrated this incident to me, I was not sure what is the feeling that I should have. On the one side, there's of course a lot of sympathy for the condition that, you know, his father and all that anxiety, but also feelings of envy. Like, how I wish I could be the recipient of right. So much love from Swami.
And I'm, even as you're saying that, you know, there was this lion dance which was planned for one of the sports meet.
Hmm.
You know, that was the VIP event of that year.
Hmm.
Because Swami gave it so much importance. And Swami would have those boys practice in the Purnachandra auditorium. He would come and visit. He would sit through the practice. And he would ensure they have snacks and, you know, refreshments after their practice. There was a time when so much of hype was there around that. And Swami was either being in the practice with them or in the interview room with talking those boys, to talking to those
yes,
boys.
Yes.
In one of those practice sessions, he realized that one boy was restricted in his movements and he was not doing as freely as he usually does.
Mm.
And Swami called him and said, "Oh, what happened? What is troubling you?" And he said, "Swami, I'm having a sprain in my neck.
Mm.
And yesterday while practicing, I sprained my neck."
Yes.
He said, "Oh, sprain in your neck." And the same thing, you know, Swami told him, "Come here." And Swami made him put his head on Swami's lap.
Mm.
And then Swami started massaging his neck.
Yes.
And for nearly 10 minutes, and you can imagine, there was the youngest boy in that group, one of these students from the 11th standard. Immediately he came up and said, "Swami, even I am having sprain in my neck." And Swami was sweet enough to do, you know, just for a few minutes, do for him also.
Also, okay.
And, you know, even as you talk of this, I'm sure some of the listeners might say, yeah, after all, students.
Hmm.
You know, students are always special for Swami.
Yes.
People might be given to think like that, but the fact is it's not true at all.
Hmm.
The idea that somebody, when I was talking to somebody in the ashram, and talking of how Swami as an administrator was different, as a person running such a huge organization was different.
Absolutely.
He said, just as much access the vice chancellor of the university had, the sweeper in the college could go up to Swami and tell his problem.
Yes, yes.
And you know, that was what changed everything in this place.
Mm.
And I think we have, you working in the ashram will have a lot of examples to say in that. I have a couple of them. But maybe we'll take a short break here and we'll come back and we'll narrate. Dear listeners, we are in the middle of a beautiful discussion. And if you have not made the topic clear, if anybody comes to Swami and is wondering what attracts those people to Swami, we might think it is miracles. We might think that it is his philanthropy. But the only thing which actually attracts all of us, which has attracted all of us to Swami, is that pure selfless love. So we will play a little song, at the other end of it we'll resume our discussion. Pyar hu main, tera pyar hu main, teri jyoti ka vistar. प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरे श्रोत का ही प्रकार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं अति क्षुद्र हूँ मैं विशाल हूँ कोई भाव गीत ही अविराम प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ Oh,
मैं कुम्हार हूँ, मैं लोहार हूँ, मैं पसीने का एक बूंद हूँ, तेरा दास आके मूंद हूँ। बड़ी दुर्दशा से मुक्त हो चेहरे पे तेरा आनंद हूँ, आनंद हूँ मैं, एकता मानवता का आधार हूँ मैं, प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा, प्यार हूँ। मैं ही कृष्ण हूँ, मैं ही राम हूँ, मैं कुरान पाक अजान हूँ, मैं ईसाइयों का तारा हूँ, मैं ज्ञान गुरु के द्वारा हूँ, मैं निरोग हूँ, मैं आलोक हूँ, मैं ही सत्य हूँ, मैं ही धर्म हूँ, मैं ही शांति प्रेम आधार हूँ, तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं, प्यार हूँ मैं, तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं, तेरी ज्योति का विस्तार हूँ मैं, प्यार हूँ
मैं। Welcome back, dear listeners, and you're with me, Prem, and with me is Hari from Central Trust. Hari, you know, as we were narrating incidents of Swami's love for students, and I said, people should not be taken away by the fact that it was only the students which were special, which was not the case at all. I'm reminded of what happened in Vrindavan. When I was studying in Vrindavan, this person was still there. There used to be a sweeper in the hostel. Mm-hmm. You know, the person who used to come around sweeping, and I think he's still there. Even now, if I go to Vrindavan, I sometimes meet him.
Right.
A very humble person. His name is Ramayya. Mm-hmm. And we all used to know him. You know, we've all grown up with him, something like a grandfatherly figure for all of us.
Right.
This person once, he was performing his daughter's wedding. Mm-hmm. So this was in the mid-90s. He came up to Narasimhamurthy sir, he was the warden then, and gave him an invitation and all that. And he expressed his desire that he wants to go up to Swami for blessings for his daughter. So Narasimhamurthy sir said that, you know, Swami doesn't like recommendations. I cannot take up your name. But he said, you stand in this particular place with your wife and daughter, which is like the corner between the Kalyan Mandapam and the and the hostel.
Yes.
So he said, when Swami comes out for darshan, Swami will see you and Swami will come and bless you. So the family was standing there. And that morning Swami came out for darshan, looked at this family. He looked at this Ramayya standing there, but went away for darshan. And 45 minutes, Swami went around giving darshan, picked up some people for interview. Again, Swami came back and looked at this person, but went off inside Thrai for the interviews. And the interviews were going on. And this person was very, very dejected. He came up to Narasimhamurthy sir and said, "Sir, Swami looked at me, but he never came and blessed. I am feeling really sorry about it, sir." So Narasimhamurthy sir told him that, you know, you stand here. There are times when Swami comes out for a drive after the interviews. Swami might come out in the car, so if you're still standing here, Swami might stop and speak to you and bless you. So he said, okay, that's the last hope, because I think the next day was the marriage or something. So this family was standing there, and about 45 minutes to 1 hour interviews were over, and around 9:30 the devotees had dispersed, the students had gone back to the college. Suddenly they saw that gates were opening and the car did not come out. Swami came walking. Swami comes straight to this man and he says, "I have come to bless your daughter. You were feeling bad that I didn't come and bless you, no?" Swami said, "Today is Monday. 7:30 to 9 is Rahu Kalam. I did not want to bless your daughter during Rahu Kalam."
Yes, Rahu Kalam is considered
an inauspicious time for any new beginnings.
Yes, yes.
And when Narasimhurthy sir narrated this to us in our classes, and we've heard him narrate this even in public gatherings, he said just about 3 or 4 weeks before that, Mr. Atal Bihari Vajpayee was there in Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he was the external affairs minister then. He was not a prime minister. And Swami had called him inside an interview, and after he came out in tears. And he often recollects that what he went up to Swami and said, "Swami, can I come to your house now and then?" You know, that was the question which Vajpayee asked Swami. "Aapka ghar hum kabhi kabhi aa sakta hai?" You know, he asked. And the response which Swami gave was, Swami said, "This is not my house. This is your mother's house. You can come whenever you want."
Right.
And Narasimhurthy says that, you know, the prime minister can be comfortable in Swami's presence and feel that this is my mother.
Mother's place.
And the same thing that Ramayya, who was nothing more than a sweeper in the hostel. You know, for us, it is nothing more than a sweeper. But for Swami, it was the same connection. It was the same love which was flowing, whether it was the leader of the country or if it was a sweeper, you know, in his organization.
That same, very same deep connection that Swami felt for each and every person. When you were signing off in the last session, you were talking about, you were kind of summing up like what this session is going to be about. And you mentioned that the essence of who Swami is and what he gives people is that love. And I recall how Swami in his discourses, he used to say, you know, like he used to look at the huge crowd, say, which collected during a festival, and he say, "What have all these people come for? Like, have I extended any invitation to anybody? What have they all come here for?" And he used to say, you go to someone, or you go to a shop, when you seek something, it is something that you do not already have with you, do not possess with you. And Swami said, this is what people come here for. They're coming for love and peace, because this is what they don't experience in their lives. And this is what I provide. This is my only property. And I recall one small personal incident of mine. This I have narrated before. This was like when I had joined as staff in the Sathya Sai Central Trust. It was a great event for me, a great blessing for all my family members. And it is a tradition in India that the first salary that you receive as a staff,
right,
anywhere you're working, you hand it over to your parents and you take their blessings, because it is out of their efforts, out of their sacrifices that you stand where you're standing today, you know, as earning member of the society. And here, my friend and I, we both had, you know, joined together in the trust. And we decided that our first salary that we receive, we would give it to Swami. So we told our respective parents that, you know, we will not be buying any gifts for you, etc. We took their permission. We said the first salary we would like to offer it to Bhagwan. So it happened. So we received our salary. I remember we drew it from the bank, put the notes in a cover, and we sat in the bhajan hall to hand it over to Bhagwan. And Bhagwan looked at us. It was the morning darshan time, and Swami quickly, he took the envelopes from us and he went into the interview room. We were very satisfied that we had done our duty, so to speak. And that evening, again, we were seated in the very same place, and after darshan, Swami looked at us. There's no smile on his face. He had a scowl.
Okay.
And like, I was a little worried, and even my friend was a bit pensive what was going to happen next. And then Swami went into the interview room, and again, he just opened the door a little and he said, "Both of you come in." That ominous tone in which he said, "I had no idea what was going to happen next." So he went in, he closed the door, and he asked, "What is it that you boys gave me this morning?" He asked, and I said, "You know, Swami, it is our first salary. We wanted to offer it to you." And he said, And then he walked in again to an inner room, and he came out with two envelopes in his hand. And he gave us back our respective envelopes. He said, "I don't need your money." And I remember Swami's voice suddenly choked, and he said, "All I need is your love. That's all I seek from you." He said, "Keep this money you'll require, but what I need from you is just your love." And believe me, I have seen that love was the only currency in which he traded. Nothing else really mattered.
Even as you're saying this, one of my juniors, he was part of the Kodai entourage which went with Swami. And one of the events which would always happen in Kodai is Swami would send out the boys for shopping. In the one session, there would be that shopping incident. And Swami would give money and send boys for shopping.
Yeah.
And invariably, some of the boys would buy something for Swami and come. So one of this boy, this particular boy, he had brought two shawls.
Right.
Okay, one shawl for his mother and the other shawl for Swami. The one for Swami was exactly the color of Swami's robe. So he came back, and there would be another session after that shopping where each one has to go up to Swami and say what they bought for whom. And that would again be an interesting thing where Swami would pull people's leg and say things. So this boy went up to Swami. He put both the shawls on Swami's lap. He said, "Swami, this is for mother and this is for you." And Swami looked at it, and you know, the way Swami responded then, he said, "I have a lot of shawls. You know, so many shawls are there in the cupboard." And then Swami told him, and Swami said, "Don't cover me with the shawl. Cover me with your heart." But that boy was so, you know, upset and disappointed that Swami did not accept his gift, and that he said, I'm not interested in this rhetoric. But Swami said, "You cover me with your love. I don't want your shawl." But the beauty of Swami, this was much later, they came back from Kodai and you know, things were going on. One day Swami had called a group for interview. Okay. And one person comes out of the interview room and comes and sits in the portico just beside where this boy's father is sitting. Okay. Apparently, coincidentally, the father is sitting, this person comes and sits, and he's for some reason moved after that interview, and he just turns to this person who's sitting next to him, who's this boy's father, and starts telling, "Sir, how much love Swami's students have for Swami." You know, Swami's students have so much love for Swami. And this person said, "Why do you say that? What did Swami say?" And Swami was talking to us, and Swami suddenly said, "See, I send out my boys for shopping, and there's one boy who bought a shawl for me." Swami had apparently refused to accept it, but you know, see how beautifully Swami is acknowledging that, you know, you did it out of love for me, and I'm acknowledging it, and to the father sitting next to this person. And, that's the beauty.
He completely rounded it off.
Right. But you know, talking of students and talking of Swami's love, it's quite interesting. Hari, you have, you know, been, I think you're from the IIT, you've done engineering in IIT. How did it happen for you, you know, to come and become a student of MBA here and then to stay on here? Where was the starting point for you?
Oh, that, there's a very interesting trigger to that. You see, when I had got through to the IIT, it's a very prestigious exam. Few people, no? Very small percentage of the applicants actually qualify. And so I was very happy, proud of my accomplishment. At that time, my grandmother had come to visit us. At that time, when I got the results, and it was time for me to actually, I was staying in Hyderabad at that time, and I had to go to Chennai to join the IIT. So my grandmother suggested that, why don't we go through Puttaparthi? Like, of course, I, through my, because of my mother, I knew about Swami, but I really didn't have any, you know, devotion or love for Bhagwan. And what irked me more was the statement that my grandmother made. She said that it is because of his blessing that you have got through.
that really hurts.
Yeah, because I thought it was my efforts, my intelligence that had got me through that exam. I was wondering, what is this she's saying? But nevertheless, to humor her, I said, all right, I mean, no harm in actually going over to Puttaparthi and all that. And so we came here, and I came at a very, you know, propitious time, you could say. That time, Swami was giving discourses daily. This was in 96 when I had come, and Swami was giving a series of discourses for continuously 70 days. The 70th birthday had just been completed, right? 1995. I have come at that time, and so every day the program would be that in the evening there will be two students who give talks, and after that there will be bhajan maybe for 10 minutes, and then Swami would give his discourse. And it was a lovely time, you know, like for me, I was really seeing Prashant Trilim after a very long time. I'd come as a kid, and the whole atmosphere, and what attracted me most was the way Swami was interacting with those students who were sitting there, you know, right in front.
Right.
That was something which really attracted me. But the day it got sealed that I want to be with Swami was one of those discourses. Swami was talking about one particular student. He said that this boy's mother, she had been suffering from some terminal condition. And her last prayer, you know, to Swami was that, she expressed this in the interview room to Swami that, Swami, you please take care of my two children when I am gone. And Swami said, yes, I will be like their mother. Unfortunately, it was a terminal disease, so she passed away a few weeks after that. And these two children were admitted to the primary school over here. Now the younger one, Swami was talking about the younger student. And Swami was saying that the boy, you know, when he was put in the primary school, the warden and the other teachers, they used to, you know, every day console him and, you know, try to placate him. That so right. Nothing would help. He would sob unconsolably because he's missing his mother a lot. And then they could not do anything. So they came to Swami and said, Swami, you only have to do something. And Swami said, yes, call that boy. So Swami took him into the interview room and then made him sit near him and told him that I am your mother. You do not have to worry about anything. I will take care of you from top to toe. And that was the message that Swami gave him. And Swami was relating this, you know, in the discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that from that day on, this boy was always seen smiling, always laughing. He's still here in Prashanthi Vilayam. He's a faculty in our institute.
I know whom you're referring to. Okay.
Yes. And you can see he's one of the most sunny characters we have over here. So Swami was talking about him. He said he never shed a tear for his mother after that. And even as Swami was speaking, Swami beckoned to somebody in the audience. And I, of course, did not know who the student was. And I was so astounded to see one very small child. He was in this boy was studying in the 8th class, about 12 years of age. I saw a boy get up and he ran up to Swami and he hugged Swami. And Swami also put his arms around him and this boy sobbed and sobbed into Swami's robes. And as I looked around, I could see there was not a single person who had a dry, who didn't have a tear in his eyes. Just looking at that beautiful interaction between Swami and that little boy. And that is when that desire was born that if there is something I want really in this world, it is that love. Said, I want this for myself. And of course, as the things transpired, like Swami actually, he blessed me, he answered my prayers with the opportunity of being a student at his feet. That was something that really moved me.
Talking of that particular student, and I remember one talk which he gave in the university once. He was a student where he narrated an incident. In the beginning, we spoke of Swami performing miracles and the backdrop of those always being that love.
Yeah.
And always being to show that love and to convince you that that love is always there for you. You know, that was always that driving force and the background of whatever he did.
Mm.
As you said, Swami had promised this boy that I am your mother henceforth and you should look up to me as your mother.
Mm.
He was narrating that, you know, once Swami had sent papayas to the primary school.
Okay.
And Swami would often do that, watermelons, papayas, mangoes, Swami would keep sending to the for the children.
Mm.
And these kids are little children and they won't know what is their limit and if it's a favorite fruit of theirs, and they would, you know, silently eat more than they're supposed to. So apparently this boy had eaten more than he was supposed to.
Gorged on the papayas.
Okay. And late in the night, his stomach was playing up and he had to go to the loo.
Right.
But what happened, it was late in the night, everybody was asleep, no teachers around. So going to the toilet means going alone in the dark.
Hmm.
And this boy got up, he was so badly wanting to go to the toilet,
right,
but the fear of walking in the dark stopped him from going. So he was sitting there in his dorm and he was crying.
Hmm.
And he said, there in the dormitory, in the primary school, Swami appeared there, asked him, what is your problem, why are you crying? And he said, Swami, this is the thing, I want to go to the toilet. Held his hand, took him to the toilet, switched on the light and made him do whatever he had to do, brought him back, put him to sleep and then went. And you know, you can talk of this as, you know, what a great miracle, Swami appeared there, you know, in flesh and blood. But for Swami, if you ask Swami, what did he do? He said, no, I just
kept my word.
Really, you know, that's what Swami had said, you know, I loved him and I just had to show him then.
Yes, absolutely. So his love is that great that, you know, to us it seemingly is transcending the laws of nature, but he cannot contain himself.
Right.
Yeah, that is the extent of his love, the amount of selfless love that he has. It expresses this itself in what we call as miracles.
Right.
That is what I have seen in my time as a student and as a staff over here. And you know, what is the effect of this love? You know, like that, this love is not merely given, just as we said, you know, even this has an aspect that it is not merely for demonstration or a show of affection. That God's love has a beautiful effect. You know, even, let's say, you know, actually the topic for this talk, it was born out of a discussion that I was having with a small group of people yesterday in the Western canteen. So it was a holiday yesterday for us over here, election day and all.
Right.
So we are seated comfortably there in the Western canteen savoring our breakfast. And you will not believe, it's election day. The topic definitely of discussion is politics.
Right.
We began with that. And somehow, I do not know where in the middle of it, we started talking about Swami. I don't know how the gear shifted, but we started talking about Swami and each one was narrating, you know, small instances. And at the end of it, I remember when I came out, it was as if somebody had literally scrubbed my mind free of all, you know, I felt like impurities had gone out of my mind, that all the stresses, anything that was troubling me on all that, I was completely rid of that. That was what really prompted me. I said, like, why don't Prem and I in this session, we just share Swami's love, which is the greatest satsang. We can take an intellectual topic, we can debate it until the topic is dry. But what we really get, you see, it's like this. Supposing you have a hero, somebody you admire a lot in your life. And what we tend to do is we tend to imitate that person. Somehow an essence of that person enters our being. And just imagine the great good fortune for us that when we talk about Swami, when we hold him up as somebody we admire, can you believe that an essence of God is entering into our being? And that is actually the opportunity that all of us have when we sit and talk about Swami. The love that the miracles that he performs, yes, the love, the experiences that devotees have. I've always thought about this, Prem. Like, supposing I were to sit and ask, you know, every person who's ever had an interaction with Bhagwan, just ask him to sit down and narrate it. Like, I collect all this and somehow time the whole thing, you know. I've always felt that if I'm going to add up all those moments, it is going to be more than the 85 years that Swami physically spent.
Very true.
It, like, the amount of time that he used to give to each and every person, it was unbelievable. That attention, and anybody who's interacted with Swami, one of the things he'll tell you is that when that interaction is happening, they'll feel that only they exist, only these two.
Right.
Because Swami's attention would be like so much like a focused searchlight or a laser beam that you would have everything melt away. There's nothing else that would exist apart from Swami. No, it would be such a powerful experience because his entire attention would be focused on you at that moment.
Right. I think it's a feeling that everybody who's been has spent even those 2 seconds looking at Swami face to face. You know, when they would feel that this avatar has come for me, man. You know, you just feel that, yes, Swami, you're here for me. You can spend some time with the others too. It's almost, that is how, in a sense, when you say that you love a person, you know, it's all about being possessive. To an extent, that's what we felt towards Swami. But very soon you come to the realization that you don't need to possess him because he is already yours.
Right.
And that was the feeling that Swami came to reaffirm. Every time when Swami did whatever he did to those people, he said, I'm already yours.
Yes.
You know, I'm not God who has come to rule over you.
Yes, I remember when I was giving a talk one time over here in the Satsang Hall, there's one person who requested, he said, I'm entirely new to Bhagwan. I've never come here before this. And this is at a time when Swami was not physically present. And so I told him that I invite you to spend a few days over here. I invite you to talk to people and ask them about who Swami is. I invite you to go over to the, you know, book trust or anywhere to the library and read about his life. There are so many books that chronicle. Read about his discourses. And I told him what you'll discover in the end is that you always belong to Bhagwan. There is, you know, there is no one that we say, you know, that we can go up to that person and say, you have to become Bhagwan's devotee. There is no such concept. Because whether you know it or not, you're already his child. It's merely a question of you coming to know, coming to acknowledge that he is your mother. But as far as Swami is concerned, he's always been taking care of you. He is taking care of you right now and he'll always be taking care of you.
Right.
And there's no time when you're not
always, it is
child.
Only that moment which reveals that connection.
Yes.
I think, Hari, it's a perfect time for you to narrate that incident of that Hyderabad youth.
Yes.
Where he discovered that connection was eternal.
Yeah. This was a very, very strange incident. His name was Haji Ali.
Okay.
You know, this was way back in 98, if I recall. And we had come as a group of youth from Hyderabad to serve during Guru Purnima in that particular year. And I was very interested to know how it is that he was drawn to Swami.
Being a Muslim.
Muslim. And also that all the others, they had some background. You know, their parents were already devotees. Yeah, he had absolutely no background. I could clearly see that. So I asked him, how is it that you of all people got attracted to Bhagwan? He said, it's a very strange story. Sit down. So he was telling me, he was part of a cycling group. They started to cycle from Hyderabad, and part of their journey, somewhere on the itinerary, was Anantapur. Now somewhere near Kurnool, what happened was, this guy is traveling on a cycle, the chain breaks. And so he tells his compatriots, you go ahead and I'll get this chain fixed and I'll catch up with you.
Right.
But somewhere along the way, he loses his way, and instead of going to Anantapur, he finds himself on the road to Puttaparthi.
Okay.
He discovers somewhere, too late.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides, okay, let me go ahead anyway. Like, I've come this far. And he comes to Puttaparthi. He knows absolutely no one. He only knows that, yes, Satya Sai Baba's ashram is here. Maybe I'll find some food and refreshment, and that's what he lands up there for. And to his enormous luck, on the day he landed, he meets youth from Hyderabad. This is his Hyderabad service group.
Right,
Youth service group. They're there. And more miraculously, that day, Swami had said that he would grant all of them Pad Namaskar. So these youth, they said, why don't you also join us? You're also from Hyderabad. You sit with us. Swami will grant us Pad Namaskar. Now, he had absolutely no concept of what was going on, but he needed friends, right? So he said, okay, I'll join you. So he sat there along with them. It was only when he sat in Kulwant Hall, it started settling on him as to what he was getting into over here.
Okay.
Because this is first of all, like what looked like a Hindu monk.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is completely with strangers, and he found out that Swami knows the members of this group very, very well. They've come here for service activities. Swami has been guiding them. And he realized that he's a complete stranger in this group. And he was filled with trepidation. What would happen when Swami came to this group and saw that there's a stranger in their midst? And with these feelings, very mixed feelings, he's sitting over there. And Swami comes for the Pad Namaskar. Now, as Swami was walking in his particular row, their eyes met. Swami was looking at him. And then Swami started beckoning to him. Now, the last thing he wanted was personal attention from Bhagwan at that time. So the others also were, saying like, go, 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 Swami is calling you. And he was very, very reluctant. And what had happened, by the time Swami has reached where this particular boy is sitting, Swami is holding something in his hand. You know, it's like his hands are folded like this. And all of them stretched their hand to receive whatever it was Swami had. And along with the others, his hand too was outstretched. And suddenly he felt something drop into his palm, and Swami walked on.
Okay.
And then he opened his palm to see that there was a clove, lavang, that was there in his hand. And then tears started streaming. Because this gesture was something that is very, very special to their community.
Okay.
That when a person, he places this clove in your hand, it is saying that from now on, there is a bond of eternal love between the two of us. It was very significant. And he said, that's when I realized that who this person is, really. As he said, love walking on 2 feet, his very first interaction, he realized who Swami is. And that's what bound him eternally. And I would see him, every seva opportunity that particular group, Hyderabad youth group had, he would be there. Working extraordinarily, with extraordinary dedication, the long hours. It's very, very hard physical labor for people who are used to working in an office. They would spend those 2 weeks doing very, very hard labor. And he would be very prominently among them.
That's something which Swami always did, doing that one bit which mattered so much.
Hmm.
Once I remember Swami was sitting for bhajans, and suddenly Swami asked for some prasadam to be brought.
Hmm.
And that day, uncharacteristically, usually we would have milk sweets or some kind of Indian sweet for prasadam. But that day there were biscuits, one particular kind of cookie which was being given for prasadam.
Mm.
not something which we usually receive in Prashanthi Nilayam.
Right.
But when boys went out and distributed, there was one group from Iran which had come.
Mm-hmm.
And that group, members of that group broke down.
Mm.
Because it was much later they came to know that that particular day was a very special day for them.
Right, right.
Islamic festival was there. And during that festival, the prasadam which they all share is a kind of a cookie.
Oh, okay.
Very similar to what Swami gave. And, you know, for the audience, it was just that our Swami is giving prasadam and let's enjoy it. But you never know that there's a stroke which is going on somewhere in
Absolutely.
A different level.
I recall, I think this happened sometime in 2003 or 4.
Right, 3 or 4.
As a group, yes. I remember the incident. That
no, but the other thing which you mentioned, Hari, which is also very important, that even that love was not just for a display.
Yes.
Even that love was not just to come and attract you.
Mm.
But it was to inspire the same amount of selflessness in, you know, the people who are being influenced and who are receiving that love.
Absolutely.
That's something which is very, very important.
And also it had this effect of correction.
Right. Transformation.
The amount of transformation that it would engender in that very small, brief amount of time that Swami would spend with a person, that used to be tremendous. Like we've all, you know, if we've read Satyam Shivam Sundaram, we all know how so many instances that Swami would cure, so to speak, or get people out of the vices that they were habituated to.
Right.
Somebody like smoking or drinking, you know, the famous that Heineken yesterday, Heineken tomorrow.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that, just in one brief statement, Swami let that person know that I know about your drinking habit, and that moment that, his attraction towards liquor, that immediately evaporated. As I said, there are several facets to Swami's love. And I think one very, very important facet is this facet of transformation that he creates in people. One of the results is that you start thinking beyond yourself, thinking beyond your needs, thinking of people around you, like what is it that I can do for them. And I like to think of this as this, you know, if you look at the history of science, the Greeks first believed that it is the sun that orbits the earth. The earth is at the center of the...
Right, geocentric theory.
Yeah, the geocentric theory that the earth is at the center of the universe and everything else revolves around the earth. And then, you know, Copernicus, he comes and overthrows that theory. And then there's a sudden shift. People realize that it is the earth that is actually orbiting that particular sun.
Right.
And for me, finding Bhagwan was something like that, you know. It was like as if the center completely shifted. Till then, everything used to revolve around me. And then the center actually shifted to Bhagwan. Like, I realized that my life, people around me, everyone, their life revolves only around Bhagwan. And that is the enormous change. You actually, once the center shifts away from you, that is when you really become aware of people around you. And speaking of this transformatory experience that you have, you know, and that waters of those love, they wash over you, they purify you, they correct you, they transform you. I recall there's this one, a particular board had come from the center to accredit our university.
Okay.
And we had the privilege of kind of being escorts to this group. We used to aid them, like take them around Prashanthi Nilayam, etc. And in that group, on the very last day, after they had completed their work, Swami had called that group for an interview. And one of the members of the group was quite young and had sort of grown a rapport with that person. So when I was very keen to know what happened during the interview.
Mm-hmm.
So after he came out, the group also came out, and we were walking back to Shanti Bhavan with where they were staying. And so I was asking this person repeatedly, what happened, and no words were coming out of his mouth. He was like literally looking dazed, as if something, you know, had hit him. And after some time, the only words that were coming out of his mouth, he knows everything. And I was like still not getting it what had happened. So it was only when we reached his room and he sat down, that is when he could relate what had happened. So Swami had revealed to him something very, very personal to that person. It was that this person, he had this habit of smoking.
Okay.
And not merely smoking, he would also add a little bit of drugs to it to get an extra kick out of it.
Okay.
And he would do this with a couple of friends. They would go to a joint and, you know, enjoy this maybe once a week or something. So Swami revealed to him that he knew about this vice, that he knew where it is in Delhi that they would go for this particular smoke. He also revealed to him the names of the friends with whom he was
indulging. Okay.
And Swami, he scolded him so much, he was wonderstruck. This is his very first interaction with Bhagwan. But you can see like that Swami was always watching over that person, and the so much concern that somebody is being led astray this way, that he's losing his mind, his everything because of such a vice. And Swami, the way he scolded this person, he said, on this day, I promise that I will drop this habit. Right now, right here. You know, that was the immediate effect. Like he was so moved. It was not that, you know, Swami had scolded him and all that. He didn't feel humiliated or insulted by that. He was actually so moved by that concern. More than the fact that, you know, Swami was omnipresent and omniscient, knew everything that was going on. But what moved him was the fact that...
That concern.
Yes, that concern. I remember another member of the group, she related that Swami materialized earrings. And he put it in her ears, in the earlobes, and what she said was, just like a father. I recall her phrase, like her eyes were brimming with tears. For all of them, this was their very first interaction with Bhagwan. And they came away with that same feeling, which is what like all of us have experienced, that Swami is nothing but love. But it is a love that which is mixed with concern for what we are dealing with in our lives, like where he wants us to be. Our true nature, you know, that what he wants to reveal to each one of us, and how we get clouded by the many things that we do in our daily lives.
Yeah, talking of Swami's love, and a couple of months back, I think maybe even a year back, we had a conversation with Mr. Ryoko Hira from Japan. You know, the Indian settled in Japan. He's the richest Indian in Japan.
Right.
He's the chairman of a huge group of companies. And one of the most active members in the Japanese organization, he was narrating that during the 1991, when Swami was beginning the water project in the Anantapur district, Swami had called him, and Swami had, you know, it was Swami's way of making you feel one of that family. Because I remember even as students, Swami would come and tell us about all the projects. When he started the Godavari project, I remember he coming into the bhajan hall and telling us in detail about how much he's spending and how much what he's doing and where is the project in at that moment. I mean, just to make us feel like, you know, you're part of the family, and I'm doing something, I need to come and tell you. So Swami was telling him all that. He felt that he should do his bit, because that time everybody knew that the funds were not there.
Yeah,
but Swami had desired to go ahead and do it.
Declared
the project, just like he did it many times later too.
Yeah.
So he and a few other elderly devotees, they decided that they'll go to a few countries in the West and talk about this project of Swami and make the people aware and ask them to contribute to this effort.
Hmm.
So he had gone to London and they had booked a huge hall, the Wimbledon Hall or something, which is one of the famous auditoriums there.
Right.
And he's not a speaker per se, but he said that he gave the best speech he could ever give. And they gave him a standing ovation, but they gave him nothing more than a standing ovation.
Right.
So he came back very disappointed. He thought of raising a lot of funds for this project to Swami. So he went back home and he told his wife that he's very disappointed. He couldn't do what he wanted to do for Swami. Then suddenly it struck him that when I can afford to give Swami, why should I go and ask others?
Right.
So he called a real estate agent and he asked that man to value the property which he was living in. The house in Tokyo in Japan, where he was residing in. He asked, how much will I be able to raise if I sell this property?
Right.
And you won't believe it, Hari, it was $20 million was the property, because we know Tokyo is one of the costliest cities for real estate. He said $20 million he could raise by just selling the house he was living in. Just to give a perspective, the Neverland ranch which Michael Jackson owned was $21 million.
Okay.
So that's how expensive this property was. So he told the real estate agent that he wants to sell it, find a buyer and all that. Took a next flight, came to Puttaparthi, and Swami calls him for the interview. And he explains the whole thing. Swami, I couldn't raise enough funds, but I've decided to do this. I want to offer you that $20 million. And immediately Swami refused. Swami said no. And what Swami said after that was, you know, would have moved him to no end. Swami said, which mother will want her son to stay in a rented apartment?
Oh.
you know, this is a perfect example of one getting higher than the other.
Yes.
You know, here is Swami doing something which is so phenomenal,
yes,
which was inspiring, you know, as much selflessness in a businessman like
right.
Mr. Hira. And here was Swami saying that, I do care for this project, but
right.
I care for you as much.
Yes.
And Swami saying no. And he says that Swami refused it flatly, so he didn't go and sell that house. But he was also the witness of that scene, which has been quoted many times in front of Swami, that a few days later, Swami came out of the interview room with that envelope, which had 100 rupees which a boy had given. You know, he had 150 rupees or something which he had managed
saved
to save by washing his own clothes.
Right.
Mr. Hira was saying that, you know, there he really saw what Swami's love was.
Right.
You know, he accepted the $20 million without accepting it, and he was rejoicing that 150 rupees. You know, because for Swami, the love was the same.
Right.
Whether it was those $1 million
yeah.
or was that 150 rupees, Swami saw the same love in this devotee and in that student.
And he accepted the love in both
of them. And he accepted the love in both of them.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're talking about Swami's love, one of the reasons why we cannot really compare it to the worldly love that we all experience. I had this one experience where I could see that there's a dimension beyond what is apparent to all of us. You know, when you compare it, say, I am related to my parents, or you're related to your spouse or whoever, like, this is a relation that exists in this particular plane for this particular period in time.
Right.
But what I experience is how Swami's relationship with a person is so timeless. Like, you know, my father, he was later in 2007, Swami appointed him as the pujari, the
right.
archaka over
in the
here. He used to offer
right.
yeah, arti to Bhagwan. The thing with my father was, he was here not because he was a devotee. It was because my brother and I, we were students over here, and I was working here. My mother was a fanatic devotee, and she wanted us all to be settled over here, and he had no other option. The poor man, he said, okay, let me also be with these people. So that's how he found himself in Prashanthi Nilayam. Like, he had studied the Vedas, he had been experienced in that field for many years. So when the post of pujari over here fell vacant, there were so many my colleagues and even my bosses, they were all saying, like, why don't you ask your father to apply? But the main constraint in my mind was, he's not a devotee now. How can I make him offer aarti to Bhagwan? In fact, I recall that in the days when bhajans used to take place in our house, he would refuse to do aarti to Bhagwan.
Okay.
He'd be sitting with a few friends of his privately, either in the house or, you know, elsewhere. But he would not be present to give aarti to Bhagwan. And now, how can I request him that you become the pujari here? And, you know, like, that was something that was unthinkable for me. So what I said was, if Swami tells me, he commands me saying, call your father, only then will I do it. A few days later, I got a call from the secretary of the trust. And he called me, he said, call your father too. Now, I was a little bit, you know, I had a little bit apprehensive about what was going to happen. So my father was called, and Chakravarti sir, he immediately conveyed that that Swami has said that you will be the pujari. Both of you, you sit in the bhajan hall this evening, and then Swami will look at you. And the instructions for me were, like, I have told Swami that this is your father, and so you also have to be there in the bhajan hall. So I gladly accepted. He has one more chance of interaction with Bhagwan. So I sat in the bhajan hall, and I in my mind I was predicting that this is how things will roll out. That Swami would come into the bhajan hall, he would see me and he would smile at me and say, where is your father, and I will show him. And
you will introduce your father to Swami.
I will introduce my father to Bhagwan. So that was what I had in mind. So I was sitting there, and then, you know, after Swami completed his darshan, he walked into the bhajan hall, and he walked past me, didn't even glance towards me. He went straight up to my father, stood in front of him, and I heard the words. I heard Swami say, ah, at last you have come. You know, that, and at that moment I felt such a superficial feeling that I had, that this is my father, and I could immediately see that deep bond.
I am the devotee and he is the non-devotee.
Yes, yes, exactly. And the deep bond that existed between them already. And it was as if, like, you could see the weight in what Swami said, the significant way in which he said. You could see that this was someone that Swami was looking for years. Like, and he had at last, you know, found the devotee. Why I say this is that if only we could be aware of how much we mean to Swami individually, how much we mean to Bhagwan. If only we could be aware of how much He is thinking of us right now, of how much He is present in our lives, that He is there all the time, that He is guarding us, that He is guiding us. If only we could be aware of that, like how much more enriched our lives would be if we could, the moment we know this, like we can dedicate our lives to whatever it is that Swami's mission is. That is the kind of feeling that it engenders when you become aware, when you become present to how much of His love is there all around us.
When we were talking to one of our lecturers, you know, he said this once, that all through his student days, Swami would encourage them to have Swami's physical form as the center of their worship.
Right.
Swami would encourage them to say that, you know, whatever you do, do it for me.
Right.
And their life would revolve around Swami's physical presence.
Mm.
And he said they took it to heart and they did whatever it would call for them to spend time with Swami.
Mm.
And he said one fine day, Swami calls him for an interview, takes him into the interview room. Swami comes in, latches the door, turns to him and says, how long are you going to go after this body? And he said it was a shock because, you know, all through his childhood and his student days, he was asked to worship this form and keep this form as the center.
Mm.
And Swami saying, how long are you going to worship only this form?
Mm.
Will you not go higher? He said, you know, Swami had prepared them with so much of that bond of love that now whatever it takes to please Swami, you have to do.
Right.
And if going within is what will please Swami, you know, that effort of going in or doing whatever was spiritually high became an offering of love and it became so much more spontaneous and easy.
Right, right.
Now, what would take years and years for a person to achieve could be achieved in that moment of love as an offering when you do.
Absolutely.
You know, that's exactly what happens with the Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.
Mm.
You know, when Totapuri comes and says that I will teach you realization.
Right.
And he is not able to go beyond the form of the mother.
Yes.
So finally he goes to the mother and says, mother, people are saying that you're unreal.
Mm.
Is it true?
Mm.
The mother says, yes. This form which you worship is unreal.
Oh.
And till that moment, you know, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa has given himself completely. All his reasoning has been surrendered at the mother's feet.
Mm.
When the mother says that I am unreal, that is the final word for him.
Yes.
And he goes back and it is said that he realizes, and then Totapuri says that what I took 30 years to achieve, you have achieved in 3 days.
Absolutely, yes.
And that is when, you know, Totapuri realizes what the power of love.
Yes.
And I think that is what Swami did for all of us.
Yeah.
That forget about spirituality, forget about Advaita, forget about all what we would have wanted to talk about on this show.
Absolutely.
Swami said, just perfect that love which you have for me.
Mm.
And perfectly understand that I always love you. Mm. Because we've spoken about so many incidents where Swami physically interacted, Swami came and said, it is not to make people who did not have those interactions feel left out.
Absolutely.
It is that, you know, we are living for 5 years with Swami, you might have one or two incidents to talk about.
Mm.
But that feeling that Swami loved me and that I love Swami is universal in every moment.
Absolutely.
It was not fixed only to those moments when Swami came and spoke to each one of us.
Yes.
And as you said, it is up to us to remind ourselves that we are as special to Swami as Swami is special to us.
Yes.
So I think we'll conclude with that. Hari, thank you so much for bringing us this topic. And as you said, nothing can be more refreshing for us.
I am awash with this feeling of
really,
love.
It makes you feel so warm from within, and
yeah,
a feeling of rededication comes to you, and the feeling of rediscovering Swami in each one of us. So thank you for that. And on behalf of you and on behalf of me and all our listeners, I offer this segment at Swami's Lotus Feet. Thank you, dear listeners, for being with us. We'll again join you on Afternoon Satsang next week. Jai Sanam.
This is the rhythm of life to bring the world together and to love one and all. Forever and ever, forever and ever. Swami, to live in your love is what our life is all about. Life is all about. We make the world a lovely place and we live, and we shall live. Ekhi jahan ke liye, kai tere pyar ke liye. Ek
देखी जहां के लिए साई तेरे प्यार के लिए There's a place in our heart that's brighter than tomorrow that's brighter than tomorrow There's a place in our heart that's brighter than tomorrow wherein he lights the lamp of love and joy love and joy Sai is a hero Sai is a friend Sai is our everything Sai is our soul to him we hold on and believe that we are one forever we shall live ek hi jahan ke And to love one and all Forever and ever Forever and ever Swami, to live in your love is what I like